No goods isn't good goods.
Cecil suffers an unfortunate discharge.
Cretaceous world creates creature concern.
Gravity 1, Alec Turner, 0.
You know that definition of madness?
A close shave for Yuri Grom.
Annie from Avic asks, what, another one?
What a galaxy without community events. You'll never know.
The galaxy is short. Very short. So short that there's a waiting list. For stuff. With bartenders throughout the galaxy allowed to hawk their wares, or yours if you own a fleet carrier, and certain of the materials required by engineers and weaponsmiths in very short supply in those locked cabinets, it has become a seller's market. The Pilots Federation took the important step of limiting prices for fear of inflating cat videos to obscene values, the consequence of which is that they're all gone. As fast as commanders hand over their ill-gotten gains to their nearest mixologist and have printed a price tag, there's a queue of people at the door offering huge wads of cash to try and get their hands on it. The Galactic Forums took the early step of creating a public notice board where people could place wanted ads and for sale signs. But for some reason, there's the kind of imbalance you see on dating sites, where there's all of one and none of the other. There's demand, but no satisfaction. There are rumours that the Pilots Federation will be improving things by allowing far higher prices for goods at some point in the future, but there are concerns that this will lead to outbreaks of money laundering amongst some of the more piratical groups. Higher prices would, of course, make it worthwhile for commanders to start going to abandoned settlements and helping tidy up all the things left lying around. Like a kleptomaniacal womble. But for the time being, robbers and experts in B&E aren't keeping up with the market for fell off the back of a Type 7 specials. We're sure an enterprising Dell boy, or girl, will pop up with a get-rich-quick scheme sometime soon and in time-honoured fashion proclaim that this time next year we'll be millionaires. But to date, the only one that we've seen is a bit of a dodgy scam unlocking a few engineers by selling the same item over and over and over again to your own bartender and keeping the receipts.
As official apology officer, it falls to me to read this report from Commander Border Reaver. Message begins. Breaking news at W Togao. In a Pilots Federation mandated gun license or validation class, the older gamer had the closest of shaves in avoiding the most unkindest cut of all. It appears that Cecil was talking about his time in high ground combat zone missions in past days while holding a P-15 pistol. And then he sneezed, squeezing off a round as the weapon was discharged in the process. The round ricocheted off the range deck, flew between the legs of the older gamer, burning a path in their pants on the way, struck an overhead deckhead beam, and then spent itself in the sand burn behind the targets. When the older gamer looked down and saw what a near miss it was, they promptly fainted. The range supervisor has cited Cecil for premature operation of the safety catch on range and had station security conduct a DNA test on site. Message ends. We'd like to say that we're very, very sorry for Cecil. He's very much a force of nature, like a destructive storm, or that fart that you couldn't hold in any longer with the follow through.
Today, we join the global scientific community in celebrating the end of an experiment which began 1300 years ago back on old Earth. It all began when scientists at the Tanis fossil site in the former US state of North Dakota discovered some of the freshest dinosaur fossils ever, which were traced to the very day of the meteorite meets planet meets nuclear winter extinction event some 66 million years ago. So fresh and detailed were they that scientists of the time were able to extract much detailed information and, with the introduction of molecular DNA scanning and sequencing, recreated the DNA of the original animals. There was an early attempt at creating a Cretaceous world theme park where humans could visit the creatures of Earth's distant past, feed the cute ones, gawp at the non-cute ones from the other side of a 50,000 volt electric fence before having lunch and buying a soft toy. Tragically, there were incidents and the park closed shortly after. But what to do with all those surplus dinosaurs? Fast food chain showed some interest, as did the movie industry, but in the end it was agreed that creatures should be moved to one of the recently discovered Earth-like worlds out near the Orion Nebula, which was still quite remote at the time. The exact location is a strictly guarded secret, as you would expect. Here, the intrepid geeks set the dinosaurs free with just a bioengineered evolution-accelerating virus for company. They wanted to know if the dinosaurs would have evolved into sentience and civilization, as humans had done. It took a while, but the experiment has finally borne fruit. Just this week, the dinosaur people of Planet X launched their first artificial satellite, named GRRRR-1. Safety protocols mean that the project now has to be wound down before the said dinosaur people become properly spacefaring and start eating everyone. A spokesman said, "This is serious, even in the vacuum of space, we're Dyson with death." With this in mind, project leaders have gone to the nearby asteroid belt, selected a likely candidate some 5 to 6 miles across, and are now lining it up for a fast approach vector onto Planet X, which should tie up any loose ends. Well, it worked last time.
Alec Turner, the commander with a penchant for balls, whether it be the Bucky kind that races or the Guardian Orb that rolls, appears to have taken a correspondence course from the not-at-all-evil Knievel school of daredevil stunts, without realizing that he was holding the diagram upside down. In a televised event, which some of you may have seen in the Pilots Federation livestream earlier, Alec showed that he is more brave than Nick Wallenda, the tightrope walker. More cunning than David Copperfield. No, not that one. Not the Dickens character. And more stupid than Cecil at the end of a lovely party where he plays 10-pin bowling with his empty gin bottles at the weapons console of a capital ship, thinking, "I wonder what would happen if I pressed this big red button." Yes, Alec Turner, instead of using his SRV to leap over his ship, played tiddlywinks with the vehicles. With his ship launching into space and flinging his SRV into the tenuous atmosphere, resulting in his SRV plummeting. And I think that plummeting is the correct word here. Back to the planet's surface, where Alec stood defiantly in the center of a large cross, shouting, "Come on then, if you think you're hard enough." Well, it was. It was very hard. And Alec's head, though it comprises almost entirely of bone with none of that grey squidgy stuff in the middle, wasn't. Not nearly hard enough. His SRV landed with more force than Cecil's elbow when making his way through a crowd to the bar. More speed than floor-mopping guy responding to a cry of "clean up on aisle three!" And with a result as inevitable as Hanky blaming Rampage for everything that goes wrong. As Alec's vision was suddenly showing a view that was horizontal and at ground level, tinged in a lovely ring of red, and a calming voice euphemistically explained that he had experienced critical injuries. All that could be heard was his small voice crying, "Again, again."
Over in Paladin space, it appears that the EGU weren't nailed to their perch, nor were they pushing up the daisies. They were just resting. Yes, thanks to the wonders of necromancy, they've risen from the dead, like Nosferatu out of his grave, and are on the prowl for necks to feed upon once again. Nabateen and Sugrivik appear to be in need of their very own Mug Helsing, as they appear to be full of the suckers. And a few Renfields to boot. Not got your combat rank up to Gunslinger yet? Now's the chance! There are rumours that the recent instability in Hutton systems might be as a result of some of their nocturnal forays. But at this stage, you'd have to be bats to believe it. We reckon it's just the EDF forgetting what the rules are in Avik. But more on this story shortly, with Wang Care.
Whilst news from Glomspace is usually quite hard to get hold of, and that which does make it through to the rest of the galaxy has to be taken with a big pinch of salt, our man on the inside has sent us the kind of expose that is likely, should he be caught, to end up being sent to salt mines or a far-off prison moon. It appears that Yuri Grom has had a bit of an accident in the beer department. There are rumours that a recent batch of Kometra cigars that he was sent as a diplomatic gift turned out to be those kind of novelty ones that the CIA used to use. The kind packed with incendiary substances, a detonator and trigger. Of course, as a larger-than-life character who is fond of strong women, strong liquor and fine cigars, Grom couldn't help himself when it came to snipping the tip and setting fire to things only a few inches in front of his face. Which, of course, in proper comedy style, promptly caught fire. Which would have been fine, only he'd just oiled his mighty beard. The resultant conflagration left him more than a little red-faced, not least of which was in order to extinguish the galactic power-sized hairy bear. An orderly grabbed the nearest spittoon and lobbed it over his head. Once he was extinguished, our cunning Hutton pup snapped a shot of his lapel camera, masquerading as a nice daisy, and it turns out that Grom has no chin. Excuse me. It's just beard all the way up to his bottom lip. The merest of dimples and some fresh-faced cheeks hide under his mighty face fuzz. And now his secret is revealed. Will Grom be obtaining a face merkin to hide his chinless state? Is he going into hiding whilst his mighty face fluff grows back? Or is, as with Emperor's new clothes, everyone just going to say nothing and keep buying him beard trimming sets for his birthdays as if there's nothing wrong at all? No longer able to stroke his whiskers whilst thinking, our reporter says that Grom has had to fall back on his alternative evil overlord tactic of sitting there stroking his pussy instead. We mean cat. It's a cat! Really?
Well, what another exciting week we've had in Hutton Space. We're in control of a new system, the first in over a year after a very touch-and-go fight for control. We've expanded into a new system, and we've got the fourth war in an old system in as many weeks. More on those stories coming up. In the BGS basement, Barnard's star rallied a little during the week, but slumped back into what seems to be its comfort zone of 28%. To compound its woes, it's also suffering from an infrastructure failure, so shipping water purifiers and power generators into the large pads in Boston-based the Miller Depot, and no, not the dodgy budget ones you conned us into buying last time. The other factions are lining up for another round of bickering, so let's get this one sorted quickly and a bit of influence boosted before they tie up too much of the influence. The outbreak in Epsilon Eridani was finally cleared, leaving on 43%, but the outbreak has merely shifted to the other Epsilon, Epsilon Indy, which finds itself on 40%. Don't forget that Epsilon Indy is home to 90% of Alvin's subjects, so relieving the outbreak by shipping in basic and advanced medicines should be seen as a priority. Let's not leave it as long as Epsilon Eridani, shall we? Hot on the heels of snatching an extra time 4-3 victory from the jaws of Sirius last week, poor little Avik finds itself on the brink of yet another war, the fourth in as many weeks. Another contender, this time the Earth Defence Fleet, are lining up for a pop at being in charge. Exactly how EDF managed to overcome a 14-point gap in only a day remains a mystery, but it all smells as fishy as that kipper I'll be having when I'm back for breakfast. The push for overall control of Wolf 562 came to a head this week with Hutton going to war with Wolf 562 and as the long-standing controlling faction. We do seem to like things being on difficult level recently, as with Avik. It went down to the final day with Hutton bringing it back from 3-1 down to win the system on the 7th and last day. Thanks to all that fought, including our friends from the Paladin Consortium, Belwyn Darkstar takes over from me as the new boy in the System Custodians group. Dark chocolate digestives for me if you're listening, Belwyn. None of that milk chocolate rubbish if you don't mind. That's right, the last system we took control of was Narnia, over a year ago. During last week's expansion, Hutton found itself in the little system of Manar. In addition to having a Manar-Manar-Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo-Gagworthy name, there is a seemingly defunct player faction, not their home system I might add, Petra Station, a Coriolis orbiting the Earth-like world of Petra, and lots of Feddies in need of a re-education of how to be better humans. Have at it, Tuckers, we've just gone 3-1 down. At the overachieving end of the Hutton systems table, we have 6 systems above 60%, 2 of which are over 70. Remember, peeps, don't boost or dump data into systems that are above 60%, or we'll just waste an expansion and waste more time and effort withdrawing. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, relieve the outbreak in Epsilon Indy and the infrastructure failure in Barnard Star, and then boost influence in Barnard Star, Wolf 562 and George's Pants. If you want to shoot something, win the wars in Avik and Manar.
Community events are a wonderful way to spend your time, and this week we've information on all the clouds in the sky, the Nexus exploration, Trip Omega, does the sun still rise in the east, explore the Core Infernal Expedition, and the Lost Souls Expedition 3. Links will of course be posted in Twitch chat, and also in the description of the YouTube upload. Commander Diluvian's expedition, All the Clouds in the Sky, is by no means peerless. In fact, they've been doing a lot of peering.
Expedition Day 199. Well, good luck finding Horsehead Dark Region just looking outside your window. I think I've spent enough time trying to find the system that would give me a good view of it, so eventually I had to use the map to highlight it. Going to the Flame Nebula now, a much better object, just still a very difficult one to isolate in the entire sector of the Orion Complex. Expedition Day 202. And who says that the Trapezium Sector AF-ZC5, the reference system, is the right one? Well, it's right in the middle, so I guess it does make sense. But one thing is sure. If you want to have better vistas, you need to visit all of the surrounding systems. Actually, my favourite location in the region to showcase Flame Nebula is Trapezium Sector AF-ZC4. Not too far off, but a much better view. Still, heavy exploration is advised. The next waypoint will be even more challenging. Barnard's Loop, which is just huge. If you're right at its doorstep, you do not have to have the best possible view. Let me work it out and see what I can do to represent it in my own way. Expedition Day 205. We've been hanging out in Trapezium Sector AF-ZC0, the reference point of Bernard's Loop, and as mentioned before, I had to actually pull back quite a lot in my DBX Pilgrim to get far enough to be able to take a good shot of one of the most magnificent and biggest nebulae in the sky, Bernard's Loop. We could spend a month here and still find some vistas that nobody's seen before. Slowly closing on the Orion Complex, we are getting ready to move straight to the Horsehead Nebula And now one more short stop around the Orion Dark region, the very last point of interest in the Orion Complex sector. Stay tuned, Commanders!
Commander Caboose, with the fleet carrier named the Gary Hogan, after his grandfather, who actually worked for NASA, is fed up with waiting, and he sent us this update on the Nexus.
Legacy and the Gary Hogan, I went to school with him. Used to eat boiled eggs with the shell still on them during English class. Anyway, Legacy and the Gary Hogan are packed together to begin tritium mining. With no new news regarding account transfers, the Gary Hogan will be launched on their expedition into the black.
Commander Radium had a quicker turnaround than Orion Space Taxi, as Trip Omega continues apace, but he had time to scribble this note.
The third phase of Titan Contractor's fourth and largest expedition started on the 2nd of April, taking the squadron on a massive 72,000 light-year journey across the galaxy. While Phase 3 is only approximately 31,000 light-years and encompasses our point-of-interest-focused journey to Colonia, Phases 4 and 5 span across 41,000 light-years can only be participated in by commanders who have joined us for Phase 3, as this trip will not return to the bubble until the 5th of June. Our journey to Colonia encompasses what we call a point-of-interest-focused journey. Instead of completing the Colonia route via straight-line jumps directly there in 15 hours, we will be spending an entire month jumping our carriers through interesting and beautiful points of interest near and along the Colonia bridge route established by the Brewer Corporation. Famous points of interest like ring neutron stars, beautiful nebulas, black holes, megaships, Earth-like worlds and starports are just some of the sights we will see on this journey for a total of 21 points of interest visited. While joining the trip directly now that the journey has commenced will be difficult due to the ranges involved. Commanders are welcome to visit our Discord to view information about our route and follow along if they so wish. Phases 4 and 5 will be announced upon reaching Colonia, but will centre themselves around pure exploration, allowing commanders to travel out deep into the black and discover what the galaxy truly has to offer. Follow our Twitter at TCON_feed for daily updates and check our links.
Go east, young pilot, said no one ever, but Commander the Presence is still doing it.
Does the sun still rise in the east? In the east, week 5. Commander the Presence, at your service again. I had been looking forward to stretching my legs this week to go see the Umbra Centralis Nebula, en route to the first of the DSSA carriers on the expedition and leaving the last of the actual stations behind. Unfortunately, the Thargoid find last week thoroughly unnerved me. I then added insult to injury by watching an old holovid called It Came From Cubicle 3, which utterly terrified me, and I haven't slept all week. I dare not close my eyes. I even had to break open the emergency Horlicks in an effort to succumb to its milky oblivion. The upside of not sleeping is I've managed to do some proper exploration. In addition to actively looking for and finding a G-class supergiant star, my favourite part was finding a lovely little red and green unnamed planetary nebula at STUMI VE-Q E5-5995. All the systems around this little gem hadn't been touched. Well, they're well and truly sullied now, and makes for some glorious views and pictures. Having been all around the nebula, I finally headed in and rushed at the black hole to hit its exclusion zone and see what lensing effects and light warping I could get there. It didn't disappoint. There, literally, was the eye of the nebula unwinking before me. It was at this point I remembered the old saying, "Stare into the void long enough, the void stares back at you." Well, that thought was enough to have me reaching for the last of the emergency Horlicks. And swear I'd go counting nothing but bacterium all the way to the Ether Nebula in the hope of regaining some courage and fortitude. Let's hope things look up as I go to the top of the galaxy next week. Until then, TTFN 07.
Explore the Core Infernal Expedition is heading internally, as they potter around the galactic core. Commander Infernal Moose regales us with tales of some of the fun that they have been having. It's been another exciting week on the Explore the Core Infernal Expedition. The expedition has moved another 20,000 light years and is now at the Blue Rhapsody Nebula, past the furthest system from Sol in our itinerary. In spite of this distance, commanders continue to join the expedition and join in our events and discoveries. After we departed the Void Heart system, we moved to the Aether Nebula, a spectacular and underappreciated region 2,000 light years above the galactic plane. While we were there, we held a number of events, including our first on-foot event with commanders playing football with a guardian orb, followed by an SRV race off the side of a 5 kilometer high crater rim. Commander Rex Kramer, 15, also discovered double overlapping tritium hotspots there for future explorers arriving with fleet carriers. We next moved to the Red and Green Glory Planetary Nebula, where we held a race to deliver building schematics from the scan will soon be over's bartender to Sensor Mid Madness's bartender, with commanders racing both on foot in the carriers and in stock Vipers around the neutron star we were orbiting, which led to some unfortunate crashes as well as an exciting finish. After this event, we headed to the planetary beacon, where we landed our ships 500 metres from the beacon and raced on foot to get to the top of with all commanders shooting each other with on-foot weapons. There were many deaths, and this system briefly became the most dangerous place in the known galaxy. Our next destination was Galias Rest, at 2,800 light years above the galactic plane. This stop was also the highest stop on our itinerary. Although the stellar density is quite low here due to the abundance of neutron stars, even commanders with ship ranges as low as 15 light years could jump on their own from our last stop to this one. We held ship launch fighters races here around the carrier, with some commanders watching the race from within the bar and bridge viewing areas, with the galaxy providing a spectacular backdrop. The expedition has also made making numerous discoveries of black holes, high G worlds, and exobiology life with first entries in the Galactic Codex. The expedition leaderboard continues with fierce competition among the expedition crew. Unfortunately, some space madness has also set in, and there are now rumours of an Edmund Morn spy among us, which is making commanders uneasy and constantly looking over their shoulders. Some commanders have even gone so far as to crash their ship launch fighters into the carrier bridge to eliminate the perceived threat. In spite of this, morale remains high and all are welcome to join us. Our friends the Fatherhood have finally set off on their Lost Souls Expedition 3. Apparently they're all too busy doing something in the rigging and generally having fun to be able to have time to tell us about it. But they did leave a tape in an old blockbuster case so that we could take a look at their mass jump at the start.
Can someone do it in a voice chat, because obviously some people not be on this. Needs to be done in game chat, because not everyone will be on voice. So Manamaya. Thank you.
Fuel scooping.
We know there must be more, so email itookpart@huddenorbital.com and let us know.